Good morning. I'm Queen Akim, and this is the California Report. California is taking a leading role in how it deals with sexual assaults on college campuses. Yesterday, the state's Attorney General, Kamala Harris, unveiled a set of policies calling on colleges to report all sexual assaults to police. Many colleges handle such allegations internally, with on-campus police taking the lead, and this practice has been controversial.
Part of the work that we have done is to acknowledge that there are silos in our system, and we need to break through those to do the best work we can to give these victims dignity and give them a voice.
Harris says police would have to collect rape kits from campus incidents. The policies are voluntary, but University of California President Janet Napolitano says all 10 campuses in the system would adopt them. Staying on the topic of state universities, here in California, students who are in the top 9% of their high school class are guaranteed a spot somewhere in the UC system. But thousands of eligible in-state students are being turned away, even as out-of-state enrollment is expected to rise. The CSUs are also turning away eligible students. Here's the California Report's education reporter, Zadie Stavely.
High school senior Maria Lino is excited to be the first in her family to go to a four-year college. She has a 3.6 grade point average, and she's a top student at her high school in Oakland. So she applied to 5 UC campuses, but was rejected from all of them.
I was devastated at that point because I felt like all of my effort throughout these 4 years had just gone to waste. At the moment, I felt like I wasn't good enough.
In the past 3 years, 30,000 eligible students have been turned away from UC campuses, according to the Public Policy Institute of California. PPIC's Hans Johnson says UC Merced is the only alternative offered to students like Lino.
Which you can take in one of two ways. You could say, well, these students were offered a spot, but you can also think of it as a not very viable offer. UC Merced enrolled only 600 of those 30,000.
Johnson says California state universities that turn away students don't even offer a fallback. UC spokeswoman Diane Klein says more state funding or the proposed tuition increase of 5% a year would allow the system to enroll more California students. But
until we have a final state budget or an ironclad guarantee that this is what the budget will look like, we're in limbo.
Governor Jerry Brown is due to announce his revised budget plans this morning. For the California Report, I'm Zadie Stavely.
One of the things those budget plans will include is an earned income tax credit for the poorest Californians. This was first reported by the LA Times. The tax break will apply to families making less than roughly $13,900 a year. There'll be a sliding scale depending on household size. The tax break would cost the state $380 million. Now for the next installment of our California Political Muscle series. We've been looking at how influence works in state government, and Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk joins us to discuss interest groups that give tons of money to Sacramento. She crunched the campaign finance data with the help of our producer, Guy Maserati, and maplight.org to find out who they're giving to and why. Marisa starts by telling us how she got interested in this topic.
When we think of interest groups in politics, I think we think of these big groups, the Koch brothers, the Chamber of Commerce giving to Republicans in Congress, or maybe labor unions largely funding Democrats. But when you look a little closer and you spend years perusing campaign finance reports, as I have, you start to see the same groups and names pop up kind of across the board. And so we decided to take a look at four groups: AT&T, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the California Association of Realtors, and the Pechanga Tribe of Indians.
And what did you find out about how these interest groups give money?
In the case of these types of groups, they don't really care if you're Democrat or Republican. They kind of give across the board. And they also don't necessarily take sides in specific races. So just last week, Senate District 7 out in Contra Costa County, you have a sitting assembly member, Susan Bonilla, running against somebody who's been sort of framed as more of a business-friendly Democrat, Steve Glazer. Last week, AT&T opened up their checkbooks and gave the maximum to both sides, I think really illustrating that to them, what they want is access to whoever wins, not necessarily sort of have a partisan interest in influencing the election.
So it's not that surprising to me that these companies are sort of placing chips on all the different players, so to speak. But what I was wondering is, like, what's the political calculation behind this? How do they decide, like, oh, we're going to give this guy 2,000, whereas we're going to give this guy 4,000? What is that algorithm?
Well, most of these groups didn't want to talk to us, but I talked to Dan Newman at MapLight.org, who really studies influence and money in politics. Here's what he had to say about that question.
Money buys access, and access is critical to influence. So these companies are willing to spend money to have the ability to get in front of lawmakers and make their case.
It's a little confusing to me how it affects me as a voter when you have these interest groups that are just sort of giving to everybody across the board.
So let me give you a few numbers to back this up. So, you know, we looked at AT&T and we found that they had given money to most current senators, and all but three sitting assembly members had taken money from that telecommunications firm. You know, and we found in general, all of these groups were giving money to between 80 and 90% of incumbent lawmakers. So somebody like Daniel would argue, if that's the case, then where are the checks? Who's going to speak for, say, consumers in the case of maybe a battle with AT&T over, you know, rate hikes, something like that? And so I think that there are valid questions here about whether or not sort of regular constituent voices are being heard to the same extent as these groups that funnel a lot of money to lawmakers.
That was Marisa Lagos from KQED's Politics and Government Desk. She wrote a much bigger article hashing this all out with great graphics. You can find that at californiareport.org. And that's the California Report for Wednesday, May 14th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Queena Kim. This is the California Report.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. More at irvine.org. And Digital Foundry, building digital capabilities for leading organizations around the world. More online at digitalfoundry.com.